for health insurance, we must fight to keep millions from financial ruin. And make no mistake about it, the American people know who is inflicting this health care trauma on them, Donald Trump and the Republicans.
All right. I want to be generous here. I don't know if I've heard him say Donald Trump and the Republicans in a long time. No MAGA, none of this. It's actually Donald Trump and the Republicans. Here's the problem with Chuck Schumer. Well, there's multiple problems. The guy is not a leader. He's just simply not. I'm sorry. He's a concierge. And he's up there trying to be passionate on the Senate floor and reading. You can't remember that they're cutting kids' cancer treatment? A spending package to be approved, a part of the deal to reopen the government. I mean, come on. He's just sitting here reading off of a document, but trying to make it sound like he's impassioned. Senator, you really need to sound impassioned. And then, like, I don't know who this is for anymore. Like, I, without a doubt, at one time, people would read Axios or Politico and actually, like, were naive enough to think, like, they're learning something. But this scoop, what was it in? Axios or?
Axios.
Axios. Yeah. Here's the scoop. Schumer privately fought to extend government shutdown. I wonder where that scoop came from. This reporter probably had to do a lot of digging.
Little birdie
as
told
in
me.
Like, wait, my phone's ringing on my table. I got to find it. Oh, okay. Oh, hello, Chuck Schumer's chief of staff. What? Oh, really? Is that right? Here's the story. I mean, this is what we call a beet sweetener. The chief of staff or whoever it is from Chuck Schumer's office calls the reporter and goes, hey, man, here's the story we got for you. And if you do me a solid on this, I'll hook you up with something in the future. Why it matters. A Senate minority leader, Chuck Schumer, publicly battled Republicans over the government shutdown. He was privately cajoling a group of moderates not to fold before November. Democrats are blaming Schumer for not prolonging the shutdown. In reality, it could have been much shorter. 2 weeks into the shutdown, a group of moderates told Schumer they were ready to vote to open the government, according to three sources familiar with the conversation. It's unclear if that group was big enough to end the shutdown. In other words, that group was not big enough to end the shutdown. But Schumer persuaded the moderates to hold out at least until the beginning of November when open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act began. The number of arrows in Chuck Schumer's quiver to cajole or convince these moderates, it's not even arrows. There was like a cannon in his quiver. All the polling showed Donald Trump at his lowest approval rating during the shutdown. All the polling showed that Republicans were overwhelmingly being blamed for it. All the polling showed and all the news media showed that people were outraged at the increase in their ACA insurance bills. They were getting blamed for insurance bills across the country and across, like, outside of the ACA because in part of, like, the big, beautiful bill stuff. But nevertheless, Republicans were getting blamed for what they wanted and needed to. And then a week ago, the Democrats had the most electoral success that they have had in any given day for ages, maybe since 2018, but maybe since before then. They didn't lose a single race. They didn't lose dog catcher in New Jersey. I mean, nowhere. At the very beginning of the shutdown, Schumer was put on notice by a group of moderate Democrats didn't want to pick the government shutdown fight in the first place. Yes, that was obvious. We could see the contemporaneous reporting. We let him know what we were doing, said Jean Shaheen, who led the bipartisan talks to find a compromise. In fact, you'll recall, they did make a deal 2 weeks ago. Am I the only person who remembers this? They did say, like, okay, we'll do a one-year extension. And they got rejected by John Thune. So they go, what was Schumer doing? Where was the value add that Schumer was bringing to this? Asked if he ever felt that Schumer was working against her compromise package, Shaheen declined to comment. I don't really want to get into the private discussions we had. That's because Schumer probably said, I promise you, we will cave. I promise you we'll cave.
What kind of bull is this?
This is, and you can just tell by the way this piece is written. By Sunday afternoon, the Democratic moderates ultimately decided that the cost of continuing the shutdown exceeded the benefits. What were the costs? Particularly relative to everything else. The bottom line is that the money people were getting pressure about what was going on with the airlines. Ready? Okay. This is what they said. They extracted a promise from Republican leaders to hold a vote in December on extending the ACA credits. They extracted it. Incidentally, what they did not extract was a vote in the House. They only extracted, I yanked it from them, an opportunity to lose a vote in the Senate. Not even to hold the vote in the House. So there is 100% chance of this not passing. Those ACA subsidies, gone. Not even a vote in the House. Internally, Schumer and most of his caucus argued that the concession wasn't enough. But eight Democrats who caucus with the Democrats broke ranks. What is... Now, let's be honest. Dick Durbin voted for this. You'll notice they all the people who voted are not up for re-election in 2026. Half of them are resigning. I mean, retiring. Maybe not half, but a third. Dick Durbin is Chuck Schumer's best friend in the Senate. Like, roommate best friend. Like, they were roommates for years and years and years and years. When Dick Durbin votes for something, more often than not, he's doing it for Schumer. Schumer couldn't convince his best friend who's retiring. That's quite a cajole.
The heat is on them when they do this.
Yes. So you have a lot of organizations coming out for Schumer's resignation. He won't do it, but I guarantee you we saw one of his longtime aides leave in the past couple of weeks. My guess is you're going to see over the course of the next 3 to 6 months at least a couple more leave, because they know it's over. It's over for Chuck Schumer. It may be 2028. He may be done as the leader in 2027 after the midterms, but it's over for Chuck Schumer. And they know it, and Schumer knows. I don't know if Schumer knows it, but his staff knows it. His staff knows it. They're all looking for other jobs right now.
And that is not Kentucky Fried French fries.
It is not Kentucky Fried French fries. All right. In a moment, we're going to be talking to Michael Blake. He is running for in the Democratic primary for the 15th district. And it's Richie Torres is currently sitting in that seat.
Oh, now, I remember him.
Yeah, you may recall the last time we heard of Richie Torres, he was on the Adam Friedland show. And that was when I think he moved from a guy who very likely may lose his congressional seat from being the future of the Democratic Party. It was a quick turnaround.
Somebody must have been fired over that interview.
Somebody wasn't, honestly. It's like, I want to do something hip. Get me on something hip. Got a word for a couple of sponsors today. Want to thank OneSkin for sponsoring today's episode. Skin needs some extra care this time of year because it's so dry, colder weather. Holidays are fast approaching. Maybe you're getting exhausted. Nonstop stress to your face, to your system. That's why both Emma and my sister Julie love this product. They have relied on OneSkin. She loves the OS 01 face and OS 01 eye. Oh, yeah, that's the OneSkin 01 eye. And they found it invaluable to have a daily routine that delivers both powerful skincare and longevity. My sister says she loves the texture and density of the cream. You just need a tiny bit, she says, to cover your whole face. Julie was looking for more elasticity in her face.
Elasticity?
Yeah. I don't want to cast aspersions, but she's not as old as me, but she's no spring chicken. And she said she's starting to see that elasticity in just a few weeks of use. At the core is their patented OneSkin 01 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to target senescent cells, which is the root cause of wrinkles, crepiness, and loss of elasticity. I can't even say that word. All key signs of skin aging. And these results have now been validated in 5 different clinical studies. I have to say, saw my sister the other day, and I was like, I don't know if I even said it, but I was like, are you doing something different? Your skin looked good. I don't really notice that.
Why wouldn't you say it? It's a compliment.
I know. I just didn't feel comfortable, to be totally honest with you. I don't like making comments like that, but I did notice it.
I'd rather tell everybody who's listening.
I just thought that she was just like happy to see me, but
that couldn't have been it.
No. Julie says she loves the reusable shell. The packaging is great. It's an easy couple of pumps. Goes on smoothly and easily. OneSkin also just launched their limited edition holiday sets, including the Nightly Rewind gift set, which is one of those rare gifts that's both impressive and genuinely useful. Provides an upgrade to anyone's nightly routine, featuring their best-selling face moisturizer, their new peptide lip mask, and a cooling gua sha tool. Each component of the set is designed to work together with your body, enters its natural nightly repair mode, helping renew skin at the cellular level for stronger, smoother, and more resilient skin. This season, don't just moisturize. Support your skin at the cellular level with OneSkin. For a limited time, try OneSkin for 15% off using the code MAJORITY at oneskin.co/majority. That's 15% off at oneskin.co/majority with code MAJORITY. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Mention the Majority Report, please. We'll, of course, put this in the podcast and YouTube links. Also, sponsoring the program today, like I say, I'm getting older. As I get older, I'm like, I should go to the doctor more often. I don't let things slide. You want to deal with things like stress from work, neck pain, other nagging things, although I've had all of that like in the past week. But it can be tough to get to the doctor. You want to keep yourself healthy. But this is our medical system is effed. Very difficult to find a doc. That is, until you find ZocDoc. ZocDoc makes it easy to find the right fit and book an appointment fast directly on their website. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. I use ZocDoc, I don't know, last year or the year before. I was out of town and had a dental emergency. Super easy to find a dentist. You can find one that's highly rated. You can set up the appointment. You don't have to go back and forth with a receptionist on there. Find out that they take your insurance. Bingo, bango. Like I said, ZocDoc lets you book in-network appointments of more than 100,000 doctors across every specialty. You can filter for doctors who are near you, filter for doctors who take your insurance. That may be a good fit for you in other ways. Maybe you want like a female doctor or a male doctor, whatever it is. You can find the type of care you're looking for, from bedside manner to fast wait times to doctors with the best listening skills. You can see their actual appointment openings, so you can choose a time and slot that works for you. Click it instantly. You've booked the visit. Appointments made through ZocDoc happen fast, typically within 24 to 72 hours of booking. You even get same-day appointments. Matt, you use ZocDoc.
I do. I use it for my regular doctor visits and dermatology.
Do you have any, like...
Cleared up my eczema really good. I haven't had to use it since.
Well, it's not that... I'm talking about the app.
Well, they found me a doctor that did that.
Well, that's the point, folks. You want to go to the doctor. Take care of yourself. Want to thank ZocDoc for sponsoring today's episode and for the fact that Matt thinks that ZocDoc cleared up his skin stuff. Stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/majority to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/majority, ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/majority. Lastly, sponsoring the program today, honestly, one of my favorite products is Blue Land. I mentioned this before. I've been on a get rid of plastic kick. Not only does Blue Land help you get rid of all massive plastic jugs that you don't have to worry about recycling or carrying them from the supermarket or whatever it is. You know those dishwashing, like all-in-one pods. Do you know what they're wrapped in? Plastic. Yeah. Thin plastic that supposedly dissolves and then goes away. But I got some very bad news for you folks. Supposedly we eat a credit card's of worth of plastic every week, just in our food and drinking supply. And like, you know, it's in your dishwasher. Gets into your body all sorts of ways. Also through the cleaning products that we use. I made the switch to Blue Land across all of my cleaning products. In my apartment and in my office. I'm talking hand soaps. I'm talking dish soap. It's actually a powder. But they give you a reusable shaker and the powder comes out and it's like it's dish soap. But I also use it in my dishwashing machine, their tablets. I use it in the toilet. We've got the toilet balm things in lieu of like the spray. I've got it for my cleaning, my laundry. All of these products work great. They all clean well. You can get some, many of them unscented, which is a big plus for me, but they also have, you know, all sorts of other scents, if you like. Blue Land was named an EPA Safer Choice Partner of the Year. Like I said, from cleaning sprays, toilet bowl cleaner, dishwasher, laundry detergent tablets. Oh, and I also have the everything cleaner and the windows and the bathroom cleaner. You get these nice plastic bottles. One time, you only get them one time, and then you just drop tablets in with water. It saves you so much space, so much money, and you get a great clean. They have Blue Land's hand soap. might be nice for the holidays. Festive upgrade with cozy scents like wintry pine, toasted vanilla, and winterberry. The dishwasher tablets, the laundry tablets, the toilet tablets, which take care of like rust and hard water. It's awesome. Blue Land has a special offer for our listeners right now. Get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/majority. You don't want to miss this. blueland.com/majority, 15% off. That's blueland.com/majority to get 15% off. That's your first order. Do yourself a favor. Buy a bunch of that stuff. All right. Quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Michael Blake. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Emma Vigeland out today. Joining us now, Michael Blake. He is, among other things, a candidate for the 15th district of New York in the primary. This is a second go round for you. Is that right, Michael?
It is. In 2020, we made this run. We came a close second, and we're continuing to see that there's more that's needed in the district around cost of living, around affordability, and just desperate change. And that's why we're running, because we deserve better in the Bronx.
Let's talk about what we have right now in the Bronx. And that is Congressman Richie Torres. The Democratic establishment, I have to say, has been trying to push this guy as the future of the Democratic Party. And he seems to only have traction amongst sort of the establishment in some ways. Like, where do you see him falling down the most? And I have to say, also, one of the things that he seems to have been decided to be his like pet project is defending the ongoing genocide in Gaza, or I should say the one that took place that we now, you know, new reporting has shown what the Biden administration knew contemporaneously. What is your sense of all of that in terms of Richie Torres?
I think when you look at what the energy is in New York, you know, I was someone who crossed endorsed Zoran Mamdani, our mayor-elect. Richie Torres refused to endorse me, actually endorsed Andrew Cuomo. When we talk about the energy of how I've helped mobilize Democrats across New York and across the country, Richie Torres has not only attacked the members of the squad, he's called the DSA a Mickey Mouse party, and has literally told people to go F off when he didn't agree with them. There is a new vision of what's happening right now. And which people are saying enough is enough and that we're sick and tired of it. And so in the district, Sam, the poorest congressional district in the country, a district where just recently an explosion happened at one of our public housing developments, a district where you have a community in New York City where one out of four people are in poverty and wondering how they're going to pay their bills, a district that we still are wondering what will happen if and when ICE rolls up in the Bronx, because we saw what it did in Canal Street. As someone who is a son of Jamaican immigrants, I'm saying very clearly, there is a new vision of what we can and deserve to have in this district in the Bronx. And when we think about what's at play, whether it be for health care, where I've said we need to have Medicare for all, whether it be on housing, where I said that we need to have an ending of credit scores for housing applications, a guaranteed local median income, and expanding out housing income limits, because too often you have to be too poor or rich enough to get access to a home, that we have to cancel student debt, that we have to say very simply that ICE has no damn place in our communities, and that you can say, and I will say, as an ordained reverend who has been to Israel twice, who has baptized people in the Jordan River, who has prayed at the Western Wall, that yes, what Hamas did was inhumane and brutal, but at the same time, a genocide is happening. You can say both at the same time. And when we talk about what is occurring in this party, people are saying we need something better. You cannot say that you can watch how Senate Democrats, eight Senate Democrats, caved this past week, where they made a decision on a deal that does not guarantee that we will have the Affordable Care Act continuing because they wanted to agree with the Republicans. I am not here to agree with Republicans. I'm not here to agree with Richie Torres. I'm here to be with the people. And that is the reason why more than 2 million people have already watched our launch video. It's the reason why we have heard from across the district, people are excited about what we want to do. And we said very clearly, if you know that we deserve better, then my name is Michael Blake, and I want to be your congressman for the South Bronx.
Have you, Michael, over the course of the past 2 years, have you had constituents come up to you and go like, hey, I just want you to know, I made a mistake. I should have voted for you the first time and didn't. Has there been like a sense that Torres has been out there sort of, it seems, at least from here, that he's been a little bit distant from his own district and more out there trying to make a name for himself in, the establishment circles.
Yeah. So the we've had people who in the last few days, in the last few weeks, and last few months would remind me, come up to me and say, we will never forget that in that first race that you were out there feeding people during COVID and giving out PPE, and we have a chance to do this right this time, right? You have folks who are saying very clearly, he is not who we thought he was, and we want to do something different. And when people have been saying, yo, you know what? We want to learn more. I've been real clear. Go to our website. Go to michaelblakeforcongress.com and see the vision, right? See what we're talking about. See, when we talk about for Puerto Rico, to your question, the dynamic of self-determination. We just came back from Somos. You can't represent the South Bronx and the West Bronx and not talk about Puerto Rico and DR and Jamaica and the Caribbean, where we have said, I stand for self-determination, trust in the people. Richie is currently standing on statehood with a Republican leadership that is believing in that. So you have folks who are saying, we now see what is happening. We are listening to what is happening. And what is also important to appreciate is that in this congressional district, a district where you had so many attacks happening against Zohran in the election, not only did the mayor-elect win the congressional district, he won the assembly district that they kept trying to tell people folks would not support him because he was talking about cost of living, which I'm talking about, because he's talking about affordability, which is what I'm talking about. And what people are wondering right now is, what did you do, Richie, when you had the power, when you were in Congress and Dems had control of everything? What changed? Now, when you're there, what is changing? And they can't say that. It's not enough to just say, I got funding for your community project. It's not enough to say that he showed up for your event. You have to ask yourself, is my life changing for the better? And the answer is no. And so you have a lot of folks that have been excited about what we're doing and how we can bring people together of all different communities, who are ready to rock. And quite frankly, they're just ready for real, right? They're just ready for Democrats to be point blank and say, you know what? You may not agree with everything I'm saying, but I'm going to be real with you. I'm going to talk with you. I'm going to listen to you. And I'm going to be in this moment. And folks really want to see that we deserve better and we can have better. And that's what I'm presenting and why I'm running for Congress.
Have you, in the wake of Mamdani's win, and you were in the Democratic primary, for mayor. And I will have to say that I think Andrew Cuomo is probably still a little bit stinging from sitting on the same stage with you at that time. You know, but yeah. I'm sure that he'll find a spa to relax in Florida to take care of that. But have you found give me a sense of like the renewed energy if you've had a sense of one in the wake of Mamdani winning?
We got to appreciate when you have an election that had turnout in levels that we haven't seen since the late 60s. When you have a scenario where Zoran exceeded 1 million votes, when we think about the dynamic of what's happening, where young voters and communities of color mobilize in a way that we have not seen, not only does it show you that cost of living and affordability connected, but also if you give them an energy, they're going to connect with you, right? And you just can't ignore it. And it's not just obviously what happened in New York. You saw that in New Jersey, saw that in Virginia, obviously with Prop 50. I mean, Prop 50 in California had levels where people were showing up more than they were in presidential races. Like folks are ready for something that's different in a very powerful way. And I saw that on the ground. And I said throughout the mayoral campaign and to now, why did Zoran and I cross endorse each other in the primary? Because we both were talking about cost of living. Why did we cross endorse each other? Because we were both talking about the issues on the ground. And that's what people want you to hear. They want to hear, they want to see, and they want to understand. And I do know, not believe, that energy is going to continue. Because what we're watching right now is you had incredible energy happen last Tuesday. And then you have this foolishness happen this week of caving to the Republicans and people saying enough, and they are done. It's the reason why you have people that are flooding the phone lines in Maryland saying, we demand that you actually do redistricting right now. It's the reason why there's going to be a case in early January around redistricting here in New York, because folks want to understand, what are you doing for us, and that energy continuing. And what I'm saying to everybody is, if you are tired of listening to how Richie Torres has taken stances that are not democratic and not supportive of the people, then you have a choice. You have a choice in someone in Michael Blake, who not only created the only My Brother's Keeper program that's statewide in the country here in New York, who not only had an effort where minority women-owned businesses get access to capital that they're not, who not only can say very clearly that I have helped people get elected across New York and across the country, but I'm actually going to fight for you when it comes to your groceries and when it comes to you in terms of transportation, and that you have someone that's real. That's why we're here right now.
We've had about, I think it's now up to 4 or 5 congresspeople call for Chuck Schumer to step down from his leadership in the wake of this. I wouldn't even call it a deal for to end the government shutdown. This the ACA vote is a vote that's going to lose in the Senate. There's not even going to be a vote in the House. There's no way that these subsidies can extend. What's your opinion about both Schumer in terms of his leadership and, for that matter, Jeffries?
Look, the Senate and obviously is going to have to make their decision on what they're going to do about Senator Schumer itself. You know, my focus is running and winning this race. Real talk, I'm going to make it real personal before I get into the process of it. I was born with a heart murmur, right? I was in the NICU for 3.5 weeks. You can maybe see it behind me, but behind me further back is a portrait of the Lord's Supper that my mama and daddy got for me to watch over me, because they were just hoping I would make it as a kid. We have a family that's overcome cancer. Today being Veterans Day, my oldest brother has served this Army for 29 years. The notion that a so-called deal was agreed upon that wasn't going to protect healthcare is inhumane. Right. People are going to die because of what just happened. And sometimes folks don't want to be like that real. Like if you are wondering about your bills and you're in a scenario where I'm wondering if I could pay for my groceries or my rent or go to the doctor, we know over and over again what people decide.
Right.
And so I do think there's some real conversation they have to have in the House and Senate about the vision of what's happening here. It's definitely disappointing, right? To that degree. And that's one reason I'm running, right? And it's one reason why I have said very publicly, people see it on X, I was like, look, we need Medicare for all, right? It's another reminder of why this next generation is necessary in Congress. And it's not just about having a Democrat. It's about having the right Democrat. And that's what we want to bring to the South Bronx. And that's the reason I want people to join us when we're doing and making sure that Richie Torres does not get reelected, but that we get elected to Congress and help the people.
Michael, if people from around the country or from, frankly, around New York City want to get involved with your campaign, help how they can, where should they go?
MichaelBlakeForCongress.com. Go to the website, sign up, continue to engage with us, donate, volunteer, all the things we need. Go follow us on social media. If you see Michael Blake for Congress or you see Blake for the Bronx, we need you to be rocking with us there. And I just want people to appreciate that this is a new day in what's happening in this country. You should be excited, inspired, motivated by the people that are representing you. And I'm giving you a new vision. You do not have to stay with a person like Richie Torres when it comes to representing the people of the South and West Bronx. If you are ready for new change and you believe in the Bronx, I'm asking you to rock with me. My name is Michael Blake. Join us at MichaelBlakeForCongress.com so we can show that we can actually do this better.
And we should just remind people, I think the election is in third week of June in next June. Year.
Yeah, well, we're waiting on the final day, usually that fourth week. And it'll be a very active election because it's governor, AG, state Senate, state assembly, comptroller, all on the ballot at the same time. And we're going to show people some momentum. And I'm going to give this teaser. I can't say who, but be prepared that a major endorsement is going to happen within the next 7 days right out the gate. People are going to see that we're for real. People are going to see that there's momentum that is happening here. And if you are ready for change around the country, Democrats, we've been listening to you. If you're ready for change and you want a real Democrat, a real progressive, someone who's going to speak up and fight for you, go to MichaelBlakeForCongress.com and support us so we can make this happen.
All right. We're going to put a link in the podcast and YouTube description. I may even tweet it out, although Richie Torres has me blocked. So
I mean, that's exactly why you should tweet it out. That's exactly why you should tweet it out. So it can happen.
Maybe
out
somebody
here.
Can somebody can retweet it and send it to him. Michael Blake, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate everything you do, man. You've given a voice for a lot of people, and we're grateful for you.
All right, thanks for coming on. We'll put that link in the podcast and YouTube description. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Jay Willis, editor-in-chief of Balls and Strikes, on this tariff case. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Jay Willis. He is the editor-in-chief of Balls and Strikes. Jay, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Sam. Thank you so much for having me.
So we've got this case that was just argued in front of the Supreme Court about the president's authority under the EEIP, the emergency, well, I can never remember what it is, but it's
me neither. It's fine.
It's an emergency powers that he is contending he has to impose tariffs. And we should say Congress also, or the House, abdicated its responsibility in the passage of the big, beautiful bill, I think it was, or the continuing resolution the first time around. It was the continuing resolution in March, saying we abdicated authority over tariffs until I think it was till 2026 to allow them to escape any responsibility for this. Before we get into the specifics of that case, will you remind us of the arguments that were made and how the Supreme Court ruled when Joe Biden tried to exercise emergency powers under the Education Act to that supposedly, at least we all thought, allowed him to waive or modify loan repayments?
Yeah, I will. And thank you again for having me. And it's been wild to sort of read about this case and listen to oral arguments, I guess it was last week, and think, wait, weren't we just here? Didn't we just figure out what presidents can and can't do? But you're right. In 2023, the court decided the case, Biden v. Nebraska, about Biden's student debt relief plan. And Biden had grounded his plan in a provision of federal law that allows him to, and I'll quote, waive or modify certain legal obligations during national emergencies. Biden's position was that a deadly pandemic that had ground the global economy to a halt probably constituted an emergency such that he could extend partial student debt relief to a cohort of lower income borrowers. But the Supreme Court, and specifically the six conservatives on the Supreme Court, said, nah. And they based their opinion on what they call the major questions doctrine. I want to stress that the major questions doctrine is something that the Supreme Court has created. And what it says is basically, if the president is asserting that Congress delegated to him some power under federal law, that Congress has to be really clear before giving the president power to do basically anything big. Vast economic significance is the court's language. Stripped of legalese, the court just says, listen, Biden forgiving student debt relief, too big a deal to be legal. So the question here is...
Can we just stop here for a moment on this?
Sure.
Because the major questions doctrine, I just want to remind people,
yeah,
was made up out of whole cloth. I went to law school for a year in 1990 or 91. I can't remember what it was.
Condolences.
And yes, I've recovered. It took a while. I've recovered. But when I went to law school, we were still almost 15 or 20 years away from the concept of the major questions doctrine for even being in existence. Like, this is so unripe, as it were. Like, this is... And it was made up from whole cloth. This idea of there's no limiting principle to or defining principle as to what major economic implications are. Or, I mean, none of it. It all just seems to be it's a wild card or a get out of free jail card where the conservatives just go, we're going to use this now, actually.
And you're right. And that's why it's such a powerful tool in the justices' hands, and particularly in the conservative justices' hands, because here you have, I mean, again, my view is that COVID-19 was much more clearly an emergency than Trump saying trade deficits exist or Canada ran an advertisement with Reagan that I didn't like that hurt my feelings. That's my opinion. But you don't have to agree with me to see that the framework is really similar. You have a president using kind of unclear statutory language and asserting that to implement a major item on his policy agenda. The difference now is that the court didn't like and didn't support Joe Biden and does like and does support Donald Trump.
Okay, and so now, but they have also a dilemma because... And you write about this, that they want to preserve they want to preserve some of this. And so they have to sort of thread the needle so that they can say that. I mean, really, I mean, the long and short of it, in my opinion, is there's two things that they want to protect. They want to protect the Fed and they want to protect trade. Everything else, they're basically willing to say to Donald Trump, yeah, go have at it. But they've got to be careful in the way that they rule in this case, because they don't want to rely too much on the major questions doctrine, according to what you've written. So they're trying to find sort of more technical ways in which they can sort of stop Trump from doing these tariffs, but still sort of reserve the pristineness of the major questions doctrine.
Yeah, I would add that to your list of things that the court wants to preserve: the Fed, trade, and their own power to strike down future Democratic policies that they don't like. So at oral argument, the liberal justices, you could tell they're like still pretty annoyed about how the student debt case went down. I'll just give one representative example. Sonia Sotomayor said to Trump's solicitor general, "I don't understand your argument. Like, didn't we just say that the president, you know, can't assert broad statutory powers under made up emergencies?" And the solicitor general tried to distinguish to say, "Oh, you know, education policy, that's domestic. Tariffs, that's foreign affairs. That's really, you know, presidential power." And Sotomayor said, "Okay, so Biden could have just said that student debt was a global warming climate change crisis and he could have gotten his way." Now, the answer, like, of course not. She's being sarcastic. But the point is that she's showing that there's no real distinction here. The court just didn't like the policy in the student debt case and is a little more friendly to this president, certainly has been since he took office for the second time 9 months ago.
And so where are the conservative justices in terms of the way they apply it? How are they going to be able to serve their two masters of one, maintaining their sort of like wild card that they get to play, and two, also protecting tariffs?
Well, it is good news that, you know, for once, the conservative justices at oral argument were a little more skeptical of Trump's position than they usually have been. And I think that goes back to your point, which is that the conservative justices do want Trump to have power, do want Republican presidents more generally to have power, but not when it can start interfering with sort of the traditional conservative legal establishment, Wall Street types. Like, they are beholden to that wing of the conservative movement as well. And I think they understand that if a Republican president kicks off a self-inflicted recession on their watch, that's bad for the Republican Party's electoral future. But what they need to do then is figure out a way they can dispose of these tariffs or roll back these tariffs without limiting their power in the future. So I'll give two examples. Brett Kavanaugh at oral argument said, look, previous presidents, they've never tried to impose tariffs under this law, IEEPA. So maybe that just suggests that, you know, there's a common understanding that IEEPA doesn't allow presidents to do this. Sort of similarly, Amy Coney Barrett, she said, look, there are other federal laws that explicitly allow presidents to impose tariffs. This law, IEEPA, does not. So maybe we can just resolve it this way. I think the thing to understand here is that the major questions doctrine is not and never was, you know, a rule that this court was going to apply even-handedly. You were never going to get John Roberts up there saying, well, look, I mean, we said student debt relief, that was a major question. So tariffs, this must be a major question too. No, the less they say about the major questions doctrine in the case, the better for them, because it preserves the most flexibility for them going forward of rolling back future sort of progressive policies that Democratic presidents might try out.
Okay, there's two things there I want to address. One being, and I know you just have a couple of minutes left here, but one being sort of like their whole sort of strategic and tactical way in which they're sort of reserving, like they're making decisions without really saying anything about them, so that they can't be sort of held to account down the road on some level. I want to get to that in a second. But just those two things that Kavanaugh and Coney Barrett, they're so desperate to address this in that matter. Like the idea, it seems to me, I mean, with Coney Barrett, the idea that like, emergency doesn't specifically call, but I mean, the nature of an emergency is like, we don't know what's going to succeed in that instance. And so you would imagine it's pretty broad what you can do to address an emergency. The real question, it seems to me, is this an emergency? Like, and are they in a position to make an assessment on the facts in the case? Like, would that be a more of like a fact finding? Is there an emergency that would justify an emergency response?
This actually came up at oral argument as well. Like, traditionally, the courts kind of defer to the elected branches as to, you know, determining what an emergency is. But like, what a coincidence here that helps their favorite president. You know, that's a point in his favor. And Justice Kagan brought this up at one point when the Solicitor General said, well, look, under the law, presidents, they have to formally declare emergencies. So that will prevent abuses of power going forward. And Kagan said, all this court has done for the last 9 months in 24 straight cases is give Trump what he wants when he asserts emergency powers. All we've done is say, yes, Mr. President, we are not going to second guess your declaration of an emergency here. So like that, you're right. That's not really a constraint on Trump's power. It's more just like kind of a box he has to check going through the motions. But no, like the justices aren't going to weigh in here and say, you know, trade deficits aren't an emergency. Now, like they aren't. Anyone who's been alive for the last 50 years while this country's been running trade deficits probably doesn't think that this country has been in a half century straight of economic emergencies. So it's kind of like, if Trump's going to try it, then we move on to the next order question of, well, can we, the conservative justices, figure out a way to keep these tariffs, or can we get rid of them again for the sake of the Republican Party's electoral future?
All right, so let's move to that the other part. They want to protect the major questions doctrine because the more that they write about how it works, the more it becomes something other than essentially a wild card that they can apply whenever they deem fit, because they're not bound by their own restrictions or contours that they've created for the application of that doctrine in the past. And they're doing the same thing in the shadow docket, right?
Right.
Yeah. Walk us through that briefly.
Sure. So, you know, the thesis of what I wrote is that the less the conservative justices say about the major questions doctrine, the better, because then they don't have to, you know, potentially reconcile what they say in this case with the major questions doctrine next time they try to assert it, you know, when President J.B. Pritzker tries to use executive power in some way that they don't like. Now, there's also a possibility, and this gets like a little in the weeds of how the court works, but it's like a time-honored Roberts trick, so I want to bring it up. There's also a possibility that a conservative justice tries to write an opinion that, you know, strikes down or rolls back Trump's tariffs under the major questions doctrine to try to get the liberal justices to sign on to it, to endorse the major questions doctrine. And this is something that John Roberts in particular loves doing. He's done it in a lot of the court's voting rights cases. He's written sort of narrow technical opinions that a liberal justice or two will sign on to. And then later, when he uses that case to, you know, roll back significant chunks of the Voting Rights Act, he'll say, well, look, this court across ideological lines said this just a couple years ago. So what are my liberal colleagues so upset about? But the point is, either way, whether the justices don't say anything about the major questions doctrine or whether the conservatives try and, you know, get the liberals to endorse it, they're not going to do anything in this case that takes away their future power to interfere with Democratic policies. And that's why you saw the Republican justices spend so much time at oral arguments talking about these very technical off-ramps sort of for getting rid of this case in a way that, you know, that wouldn't cast aspersions on something even like their student debt case from 2 years ago.
Just another example of how these guys are basically working backwards, it seems to me, from how they want to rule on something and then sort of backfilling it with some type of rationale. Jay Willis, Editor-in-Chief of Balls and Strikes. We'll put a link back to your work in that piece. Really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about it.
Thanks, y'all, so much for having me. Appreciate you.
All right, folks. That's it for today, at least for the first half of the program. But for those of you who are members, we bring you the fun half. I felt like some music should come in there.
Like scary music?
I don't know. I just, I'm in a mood today where I need a little bit of production quality. Let a little music come in to like a score or something for the show.
Don't ask me about that. I'm just a producer.
That's it, folks. We're heading into the fun half. We will take your phone calls. You can be a part of the fun half by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. And when you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials, you also get the fun half. Also, don't forget justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, hot chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off.
Crime, crime.
And also, God, that really makes me laugh. Crime, crime! Total nervous breakdown!
She was cooking.
Total and complete meltdown!
Putting the gold in Rheingold.
Yeah. Also, check out our merch store, folks. We're going to get some new merch in there for the holidays, I think. But
War on Christmas merch?
I don't know what we should do, maybe. But check it out, shop.majorityreportradio.com. Also, the AM Quickie, 3 times a week, you can get for free in your email box. Breakdown of the day's news. A couple bucks a month helps you get it 5 times a week. So check it out. Corey and Whitney do a great job. And lastly, folks, it is that time of year where we put out the call, the clarion call.
Charge.
Sorry. For best ofs. We want you to send us an email in the subject line, best of, and tell us what was your favorite interviews of the year or segments or whatnot. Special bonus if you actually have a time code, if it's a clip.
Or, yeah, just a link to especially the fun half stuff, because I'll put a fun little montage together.
We do, I don't know how many shows, 250 shows a year? Something like that? And so if you say, probably, yeah. Hey, that time with that guy went on to talk about, economic populism. That's going to be hard for us to find.
I don't remember who we had last week.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the whole point of the best ofs for me is like just to remember what we did that year.
Definitely putting shirtless Russell Brand in there.
What's that?
Definitely putting shirtless Russell Brand in there with your reaction.
That was, I still haven't recovered from that, actually. I'm going to have to start like an entirely new regimen of therapy just to get past that.
Polly Market should have bets on how many more episodes Russell's going to appear on. if he's saying like, I'm going to be optimistic about Zoran and also not get out of bed for this. Like, I don't know how much.
I mean, Brian said that clip for them did very, very well for them.
For them.
And yeah. I would put the odds of Dave Rubin saying to Russell, like, hey, man, maybe take a shirt off again.
Maybe they'll all be shirtless next week.
Exactly.
It's going to be, oh my God.
How awesome would it be if people showed up one day in the Majority Report we just started and I was just lounging in my.
Hello.
Hey.
I think it's not great for like ad revenue, though. Don't been shirtless. Doesn't that count against the algorithm?
I get demonetized. If I go down below this this button, we get demonetized immediately. So, Matt, what's...
Thank God.
Yeah, exactly.
Actual friends.
Actual friends.
Got to subscribe to that.
What's happening on Actual Left Reckoning?
It's actually changing times. It's no longer tonight. It's going to be right after the show today at 2:30. Check it out. We'll be playing it out for folks. So, you know, we got Catherine Liu on talking about the PMC, and also Nick Bolin talking about orphan wells in Oklahoma. And we respond to the caving by Schumer a little bit. So, yeah, check that out today. And Jacobin Show Friday morning at 10 a.m. So look over for the Jacobin YouTube page, because we'll be there too as well.
Now, does it start at 2:30 exactly, or what if we do? What if we
it'll
go
be 2:30?
What if we go to 2:30? What if we go to 2:40?
That's fine. Here? Just we'll just lose audience for Majority Report because everyone's going to rush right over to.
Left so you're going to be on two shows at once on Fridays?
No, Tuesdays.
10 a.m.
Yeah,
10 a.m.
10 a.m.
How long
before...
do you think it is?
Friday, it's not going to be live.
We'll be live at 10 a.m. on Fridays.
We're live at 10 a.m. on Fridays?
Oh, no, never mind. I'm here at 10 a.m., so I assume the whole thing's the show.
Yeah. Brian hasn't figured it out that it starts when the camera comes on.
Little thing called recording in advance.
I don't understand.
Brian's having a tough time today.
I shouldn't even be here today, honestly.
It's true. It's Veterans Day, so I just want you to know. We did the show in honor of Brian, and I made it clear. I said, don't come in tomorrow. And he refused because of his, the oppositional
defiance disorder.
So yeah. Refused. Refused orders.
Ungovernable.
It's impossible around here. Emma took off for Veterans Day today.
She's ducking my thank you for my service.
Exactly. Stolen valor. Yeah. Folks, see you in a fun half.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now. But I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority
Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who? What is up, everyone?
Nomi Key.
You did it. Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false. No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this 7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello? Is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go start off.
You libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him!
So, what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$6,543 trillion. Sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this. Poop.
You call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Emma Vigeland out today. We'll take your phone calls in a bit. In a bit. Crusty Gnome, idea for a fun, best of fun half. Anytime PBD brought out the map of consciousness or Vinny screaming, send us an email.
Oh, I mean, the map of consciousness will be there.
It's already in there, actually. I put it in there.
Right.
Alex B, yes, this is actually a good point. Did you hear the continuing resolution also bans full spectrum CBD and THC maximum 0.4 milligrams per container? Rand Paul tried to get this out. There was a big fight amongst the Kentucky senators. McConnell put this in, and Rand Paul tried to get it out. It's not going to go into effect until 2027, but it is an issue. There was a couple of things in this, you know, continuing resolution that, and that being one of them, that they went after hemp.
Why?
Because my guess is alcohol consumption is down. And
whiskey, Kentucky.
Yes, and that McConnell was doing this for whiskey and
anecdotally,
and I cannot remember who the other senator it was that paired up with McConnell, but I bet they come from a state where there is a big beer brewer or somebody like that. So I think it is because, I mean, let's be honest, folks. 0.1 milligrams, is that what it is? Yeah, 0.1 milligrams. That's the stuff like guys like me, you know, that's what we take to have fun. Because, and 0.5 when I'm feeling like it's a weekend, maybe the first day of the weekend. But if there's anything else, like, you know, if it gets any stronger, then I'm in trouble. But the point is, like, it is, for your average person, that's not very much, but it's just enough to be able, like on a weeknight, I think, like, okay, it's like the equivalent of having, you know, 2 glasses of wine. And the problem is that liquor consumption is way down. Problem is for them, liquor consumption's way down. So I have a feeling that's what it is. It may be revisited. We've got a year. But
what are the odds McConnell knows he did that? Knows that he put in that THC ban.
I mean, it's quite possible that he has absolutely no idea. Supposedly, I read a piece that said, like, McConnell wants this as part of his agricultural legislation legacy. I honestly read that. I'm not joking. All right, let's get into this. Here is Bernie Sanders. Yesterday, in the attempt to justify their caving, 6 of the 8 Democrats in the Senate who voted to cave at the height of their leverage, at the height of their leverage, at the height of their leverage, understand. I don't know what donors it is that they needed to help. I don't know if they were doing solids for other Democratic senators who wanted to cave, but it was at the height of the leverage. In other words, where the leverage was at its height. I don't know how to articulate that anymore. Like, this was not just a cave. It was an epic cave. In fact, it's not a cave. Because a cave implies, like, the weight of something just became too much and it collapsed. This was literally like going into a cave that is pretty sturdy and then blowing it up. Because there was never a moment in the course of the shutdown where Democrats were in a better position. Donald Trump had his lowest approval rating. Not of the month, not of the year, not of the term, his lowest approval rating. Republicans blamed for the shutdown.
Sort of like punting in the red zone for our football fans.
Yes, you're at the 20-yard line and you're like, should we take a field goal? No, actually, let's punt.
And it's first down.
They'll have you. They'll have really, really bad field position. Unless, of course, we punt it into the end zone, in which case they'll actually be a yard ahead of us where we are now. Here's Bernie Sanders addressing Angus King's attempt to argue yesterday that the 2 points of the shutdown were to get the ACA subsidy extensions and to deal with Donald Trump to inhibit his power. And he said, we didn't do either.
Your fellow independent from New England, Senator Angus King, was asked this morning to respond to your criticisms of the Democrats who voted yes last night. He said, his response was, what's your strategy, man? And, quote, standing up to Donald Trump didn't work.
Well, maybe Angus didn't notice the elections on Tuesday. I thought that they worked pretty well. Maybe Angus is not noticing the polling, which shows that correctly people understand that Republicans control the White House, the Senate, and the House. They are holding Republicans accountable. And you got to stand firm. This is tough stuff. And Angus is right. A lot of people are hurting. Nobody feels good about this. Nobody feels good about federal employees not getting a paycheck. But we are winning, in my view. I think the Republicans are on the defensive. And in my view, it was the vote that Angus cast was the wrong vote.
All right.
Okay. There's no other, what does standing up to Donald Trump working look like? If it doesn't look like the biggest Democratic win you could have possibly had last Tuesday. The biggest. It couldn't have been better. Nobody can point to a single race that the Democrats lost that they should have won. Nobody can even point to a single race that the Republicans were sort of favored and won. The polling's all on the side. The question is, why did they do it? I have an idea, but here's Bernie Sanders on Brian Tyler Cohen.
Even if by some miracle you got 60 votes, where do you think that amendment would go? But no way.
Right.
Speaker
right.
Johnson has made it very clear that he's not going to entertain it. Trump would never cite it. So it is an empty gesture, and that bothers me. It bothers me that people want to raise false hopes. Oh, we're going to bring forth an amendment. That amendment ain't going to go anyplace, period. End of discussion.
Just to make it clear, he's talking about the concession that was extracted from Republicans, a vote in the Senate on maintaining the ACA subsidies. A, it's destined to lose in the Senate. B, even if it won in the Senate, it is not going to be voted on in the House. And as we know from those little cartoons when we were kids, it's got to be passed both in the House and the Senate to actually get signed into law, assuming that Donald Trump would sign it into law, which, of course, he's not going to. Why did they do this? I think the biggest reason is if you look at these Senate Democrats that voted for this, they either did it on behalf of other people or themselves. This was to protect the filibuster. because the Republicans were had two choices. They were either A, this is if the Democrats held out. They would either A, capitulate to the Democrats, extend the Obamacare subsidies, which they probably wanted to do, but these people are so deranged that even just the idea that they would lose to the Democrats is enough to say that even if the losing to Democrats means that we actually help our constituents and help us electorally because the constituents are not as upset, they still won't do that because this is an authoritarian regime. And you can never, ever let your opponents win anything, get any type of win. We saw it. We saw when Trump said, don't let Biden get a win. Don't do anything bipartisan. They understand this dynamic. So if they weren't going to concede to the Democrats, they had one other option where they literally could just pass whatever they wanted to. They've done this on three occasions already, just this year. And that is suspend or get rid of the filibuster. The filibuster is not a law. The 60-vote threshold is not a law. It is a tradition in the Senate, essentially. And they could easily just say, we're going to have a vote to change the rules. The parliamentarian says, you can't really do that. And then John Thune says, hey, remember when we changed the way that we were going to account for the budget in the big, beautiful bill? Forever, we have always said, if something's going to expire, let's say these tax cuts are going to expire, when we account for the cost of the bill that follows it, we use an accounting method where we basically say, okay, the tax cuts are going to expire. We're going to assume they're going to go back up to where they were because the tax cuts expire. And if we cut from there, that's going to cost the government something. They unilaterally decided that they were going to change the way they were accounting. So the big, beautiful bill looked like it cost less. Now, everybody knows it didn't, but on paper, it looked like it cost less. That was one time they got rid of the filibuster. The other time was when they wanted to override California environmental standards. They overrode the filibuster. They could have done it this time. And Trump would have forced them to do it, eventually, the Republicans. But the Democrats still, they are so institutionally blind. They are such institutionalists. They are so determined to get back to normalcy, even though it is quite clear there's another party that is not normal, that is full on authoritarian at this point. They wanted to protect the filibuster. They wanted to protect the filibuster more than those Republicans, because if the Republicans want to make it easy for the Democrats to cave, they could have said, okay, we'll do half subsidies. We'll do subsidies for a year. We'll do subsidies for 6 months. But they didn't, because they knew Democrats are going to cave. And why is it so important to people like Chuck Schumer, Catherine Masto Cortez, Jackie Rosen, Tim Kaine? Why is it so important to them to have the filibuster? So that they can vote for policies that their voters want and know that it won't go into effect because they don't have 60 votes, because they can't get the extra 10 votes they need or 5 votes they need from the Republicans. This is down the road. That's it. Like, this is, you want to talk about something that is really about like a class war. This is what it is. Because they're not even, for Jean Shaheen, she may never even have, she's never going to take this vote. She's going to be, she's going to retire before Democrats could ever take control of the Senate. But this is, the U.S. Senate was set up to protect the interests of money. I'm talking in our Constitution. when this country started, you couldn't even vote directly for the senators.
We should have called it the House of Lords, because I think people understand what it means when you call it that.
100%. And the filibuster is there to thwart. And if you look at it historically and you look at it statistically, it thwarts progressive measures by a 5-to-1 margin. Because the only thing that Republicans ultimately want proactively is tax cuts. And there's always a reconciliation bill, which is avoids the filibuster. And so they never have to worry about any, you know, whatever their agenda is. But in terms of progressives, or just even like mainstream Democrats, this allows Tim Kaine to vote for whatever progressive healthcare measure down the road he might be faced with having to vote for. He needs to be able to justify it to his constituents. I voted for it. But it was a safe vote because he knew it was never going to pass because of the filibuster. I mean, the thing is that if we got rid of the filibuster, you know what the Republicans would do? You know what they would pass? Try and come up with something. They have no other agenda. They did it already. We just cut taxes. They did it. They already did everything that they wanted to do. The only thing would be that they would pass would be some ways of ostensibly, and I don't know how they would do this, and they, you know, they're not always right, of inhibiting the vote in 2026. But states are doing that anyways. The filibuster is a tool by the Democratic establishment more than any other to thwart progressive change and blame it on somebody else. And that's why they voted this way, because they didn't want Donald Trump to force the Republicans to get rid of the filibuster. Chaco. Chuck always chickens out. I think we got to use that.
Should have told them it was about like taking sanctions off Iran or something.
Exactly. Now, I will say there are other aspects to it. I think preservation of the filibuster was probably one of the primary reasons, was the primary reason why the Democrats caved in the way they did. But I think as a second order issue, what was happening with airlines was going to put enough pressure on the Republicans where they would get rid of the filibuster to just pass it if the Democrats didn't cave. Here is Donald Trump. I mean, imagine, first of all, being an air traffic controller is probably one of the most stressful jobs that exists. You're constantly like, if I fuck up, I'm going to kill a lot of people. It's like performing surgery on 200 people every hour simultaneously. Right? Like, if I mess up here, you know, you do one surgery, one potentially life-threatening surgery a day, and I would imagine that's pretty exhausting. But if you've got to do that like on 200 people simultaneously, and then 5 minutes later you got to do it again, that would be
also, I'm driving Uber shifts after work.
And you're completely screwed over. Now imagine you're understaffed, so it's even tougher. There's one nurse running from every bed possible, running around essentially. And now imagine you're not getting paid. So you're at work, you're in a highly stressful job, you are completely understaffed, and you have in the back of your head of like, is my landlord going to kick me out? How am I going to feed my kids? Here's Donald Trump, like literally within the 24 hours that the Democrats caved, SNAP benefits were forced to be resumed by a court, and Donald Trump handed them a massive gift, which was crapping all over air traffic controllers. This is number one. Clip number one.
What I was not happy when I saw all these people. Oh, we have to look. Life is not so easy for anybody. Our country's never done better. We should not have had people leaving their jobs. And what I basically did is say the ones that stayed, of which were, there were a lot of them, I'm sending them a $10,000 bonus.
Where's that money coming from?
I don't know. I'll get it from someplace. I always get the money from someplace regardless. It doesn't matter. I do a lot of bonuses for people because it's really something that, it's like the American way when you think about it. So here's somebody that goes and shows up every single day. Some of them showed up early because they knew there was going to be a problem. Those people should be rewarded. Others, we can't make it. We can't. You know, a lot of the people that showed up also had a second job. They took a second job temporarily. But they all know the money's coming, and the money was coming. So I want to reward the people that showed up without a lot of nonsense, without a lot of talk. They did their job. And in many cases, they worked longer hours to get us through this period.
He's saying that he is crapping on all of those.
I can't feed my kids.
I can't feed my kids. I got to go get a second job. I can't show up at work because I actually have to get a job that pays me money.
I'm evicted.
See, it's crazy because you would think he just isn't aware of all of the turmoil, but he clearly has seen the stories that we've all seen of the traffic controllers who are like, oh, crap, I need to get a second job this month. In that gig economy, in the off hours I'm using that I should be using to sleep so I can be rested.
It's hard on everybody. Listen, I got to tell you, it's hard on everybody. When we were having our Great Gatsby party, we thought we were going to run out of caviar. And I was like, hey, wait a second, we're going to run out of caviar? And it's just panic. We had widespread panic.
There were guests that were supposed to be there, but their flights were delayed.
I haven't found real gold paint. Do you know how hard my life is?
Also, embedded in that response is, well, I'll find the money. I always find the money. In other words, I break the law. I break the law all the time. I break the law all the time. And in fact, what are the Democrats going to do about it? What are they going to do? Not cave and require me to follow the law when it comes to congressional appropriations? We don't have to do that.
You could have the Republicans in Congress pass the bonus for them instead of you like going around to some, I don't know, Bitcoin scammer that has extra cash and wants to make a PR splash or something, whatever's going to happen.
Guarantee you the bonus is not delivered, so it doesn't matter.
He did that interview last night, right?
Yes.
Okay. I think he got his shot, his stuff yesterday or Sunday. He was looking a little bit on top of it there, right? Let's play something else. Do we have another clip from there? Here he is on, here he is on, he's still on, Ingram, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about recently. I'm talking about for years they've been going up. And he said premiums will go down. Everything will be wonderful. It's horrible health insurance at a very high price. And what I want, and probably what you're alluding to, is the fact that I want, instead of going to the insurance companies, I want the money to go into an account for people where the people buy their own health insurance. It's so good. The insurance will be better. It'll cost less. Everybody's going to be happy. They're going to feel like entrepreneurs. They're actually able to go out and negotiate their own health insurance. And they can use
it. Oh, God. He said the magic words to me. Folks, I feel so unfulfilled. I have never had the opportunity to go in and negotiate my health care expenses with the doctors. I'm sitting here and I'm like going, hey, doc, let's negotiate about this. You say I need an appendicitis? I'll tell you what. Throw in a tonsillectomy and we're talking. Let's do this. Let's wrap this up. I got an ingrown toenail. And deviated septum. Let's just do this all together. I'll give you twice the amount of business. We get it done. Bingo, bango. I can't wait to be entrepreneurial. And I also got my health savings account. I got that. And I also am doing some day trading. I had a good day yesterday. So, let's do that bypass.
It's like Jerry Maguire of health.
Exactly.
So you get Medicaid for all, and they're just like, we're going to take care of what's wrong. Boring.
It's no fun.
I want to negotiate.
No fun. Yesterday, I went long on some crypto. And so today, I can afford to get that bypass surgery that I've been thinking about. Let's do this.
I don't even need the bypass. I just like the deal.
He's like, the way that we're going to health savings accounts. But how is that in any way going to impact the cost of private health insurance? ACA is the part where we subsidize private insurance is a horrible system. It is only slightly better than the horrible system that preceded it. The patient protections embedded in the ACA, remember it was the ACA PPI. That was the actual name of the thing, the Affordable Care Act Patient Protection Initiative or something. The patient protections are good. We don't have lifetime caps. We don't have yearly caps. We don't have rescission. We don't have, you can stay on the insurance until you're 26. There are some free things that insurance companies pay for because it provides for better health outcomes. The expansion of Medicaid, good. The cost controls, the rate of increase did slow. It did bend the cost curve, as it were. But it still goes up 7-8% a year. We did cut the number of uninsured in this country down by 3/4. It was something like 40 million people before. And now it's closer to like 10 or 12. Now that number is going to go shoot back up. But it's not like the Republicans have another plan. They've been trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act for over 10 years, and they have no plan. They haven't even written up a plan.
That health savings account, that's like dusted off from 15 years ago.
It's been, you know, some people have it. If you have a high deductible insurance plan, you're eligible for a health savings account, which basically means like you can put the money in there. But this is also, understand, this is not terribly dissimilar from a 529, just a way for wealthy people to avoid taxes. Because if you don't have enough money at the end of your paycheck every week to save towards, I don't know, a house or a car or an emergency, you don't have money to put into a health savings account, let it accumulate interest over 20 years. I mean, this is their strategy, right? For wealthy people, this is what they do if they have a high deductible plan. You put it in the health savings account. You put it in there when you're like 25. You put in whatever it is, $2,500, whatever the limit is, $5,000, I don't know. You put it in there. You let it accrue. You pay for all your health costs out of pocket. And then when you're like 60, you can actually get reimbursed for all those costs. In the meantime, that money has stayed in this account, tax-free savings. And it has accrued and accrued and accrued and accrued and accrued and accrued and accrued. Then you can take your money, pay yourself back from that account, all that tax-free money is there. Then you get on Medicare. That's the plan. We're going to look. Some people have money. Some people don't have money. And the way that we're going to work it is the people who have money are going to be able to get more money. And now I got to go.
And then it's your fault for being bankrupt because of cancer.
Maybe you should have thought of that before you got cancer.
Should have cut some better deals, buddy.
I mean,
be entrepreneurial about
you gotta make a deal with cancer.
One more quick one from the Ingram interview.
Is this the magnet one?
Yes.
Oh my God. All right, let's do this. Yep.
But it's so President Xi was willing to do the rarer thing, that's magnets. Now, nobody knows what a magnet is. If you don't have a magnet, you don't make a car. You don't make a computer. You don't make televisions and radios and all the other things. You don't make anything. It's a 30-year effort to monopolize a very important thing. Now, within 2 years, we'll have magnets, all the magnets we want, but we don't. Because of tariffs, I called. I said, listen, here's the story. You're going to play the magnet. I'm going to play the tariff on you. And for national security purposes, I raise the tariff by 100% over and above what they were paying, which was 55. So he was at 155%. Within 10 minutes, I got a call. We'd like to meet. And we settled it out. And we made a wonderful deal, great deal for our country. But it's so...
You play magnet, I play...
Okay. Incidentally, it's not the rare earth. It's not the rare earth minerals that we're concerned about. It is the processing of the rare earth minerals. We do not have the capacity to process them. But I call it magnets because it's easier to think about.
Nobody knows what that means.
Nobody knows what I'm talking about. I say magnets around everyone in the White House, and they're all just like, what? What are you talking about? Because they don't know.
Nobody's ever heard
of it. You know, I mean, we could, but it would take a government action to do it, to develop our capacity, which is what China did. But we'll play tariffs instead.
We'll play tariffs. Incidentally, the tariffs, I mean, we just spoke to Jay Willis. I think the tariffs are going to get struck down. And the only person who's going to make any money off of this is, and what happens, if the tariffs are found to have been illegal, then all of these businesses that were charged tariffs and paid tariffs are due to get that money back. Many of those businesses sold that right for cash months ago, right? So, like, it's basically an if come. I have a chit that says I've been charged $100,000 for tariffs. I have this chit. If the Supreme Court rules that those tariffs were taken from me illegally, the government has to pay me back that $100,000. But 6 to 8 months ago, I'm like, I don't know if this is going to get overturned. And I need cash now to pay for these, toothpicks that I imported from China. And I need cash. So some dude comes along and says, hey, I'll give you $30,000 right now, cash. And you give me your chit. That may be worth $100,000 or maybe worth nothing. And so I need the cash. So I say, okay, here's $30,000. Now that dude who bought it from me, his name was Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick's son and other son. They bought billions of these chits. And so when you see Howard Lutnick on television, super psyched that we're doing more tariffs on Canada because of some ad, it's because his sons,
Kyle and Brandon,
they're going to make so much money. Howard Lutnick is going to leave this administration probably within the next year.
Lutnick hasn't stopped smiling in like 8 months.
And this guy, he's going to look back. He's going to leave the administration within the next year. And it's going to take him 3 or 4 months to be like, I'm past the humiliation. Nobody, all those people who were pissed at me before at the country club, like, how can you do this, blah, blah, blah. They don't care because I am so freaking rich. Like, I thought I was rich before, but now I'm really, really rich.
It's very kind of you to assume that he feels humiliation at all.
Yeah, no, I don't think he probably does.
Kyle and Brandon Lutnick there.
You know what's amazing is that their smiles are not even larger. There is a look of like, we can't look too happy.
Yeah.
Just keep it professional. We are ripping off the entire country. Just amazing.
A lot of hard work they're doing for all that money.
So I need to readjust my nervous system. Let's play some, let's do something. It's fun. All right.
We got a lot of fun.
Okay.
Mar?
Yeah. Let's
come more anger inducing. I don't know. PBDs.
PBD. Yeah. Let's do some PBD. Folks, I am also 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. If you want to be part of the program. It comes with a cost. You may have to be on the phone holding for 40 minutes and never get on. maybe, maybe, just maybe, you will get on.
If you're conservative, you get fast-tracked, right?
If you are a conservative, call the special conservative hotline number. That is 646-2573-920 is the number.
You could not have said that the worst way.
Hotline. 646-257-3920 for the conservative hotline. Libertarians, you can call 646-257-3920. Here is PBD. He's been going off. He is so worried about Mamdani. So much danger for New York.
Those landlords.
The landlords.
They do act like this is the last time they're going to talk about him and good luck, New York, but I kind of don't believe them.
No way. This guy just whatever, like, what? How many views did he get on this? This is how he operates. Half a million. He'll be talking about Mamdani quite a bit.
He's here to valuetain.
Send it to you. I don't think I send it to you. I'm gonna forward it to you. And if you can go to like the 40-second mark when I forward this to you, it's a video of him saying he's highlighting this apartment where the owner is not taking care of the tenants, which makes sense. You know, there are, you know, owners that that don't take care of the tenants, and the tenants have the choice to leave to go to a different place. You don't have to stay there. But watch what he says.
Well, pause it for a second. Now,
what a slumlord.
Yeah. You could leave for another place. Just the cost of moving, if you have lived in New York, the cost of moving. Like, the moment you decide I'm going to leave this apartment, the next month that you rent a place is going to cost you times two or three.
Do you know how many divorced couples living in New York right now can't afford to move out of their apartment?
It is expensive to move. And the point is that if you're living in a slumlord's rental apartment, chances are you can only afford to move into a different slumlord's rental apartment. But wait. Do we have an image of his house, like a 20,000 square foot house? Okay, whatever. Let's just keep going.
Go to a different place. You don't have to stay there. But watch what he says, which is the most powerful part, folks. Mm-hmm. And if you can fast forward, Rob, and go to right about there. Play it from right there. Watch this. Go ahead.
The mayor's office to protect tenants, bringing code enforcement under one roof, yeah. And watch making this. Sure that agencies are working together to hold bad landlords accountable.
Watch.
Starting on day one, we will expand the city's special enforcement programs, doubling fines for hazardous violations and tripling them for conditions that are immediately dangerous. And when a really bad landlord, like this guy, refuses to fix the city's going to step in, make the repairs, and send them the bill.
Okay, watch next.
If that doesn't work, the city's taking over the building. Oh, we're putting the worst landlords out of business. And we're going to transform 311.
Go back 5 seconds. Go back 5 seconds. Go back right there. Say it again. Listen, folks. Go ahead.
Like this guy refuses to fix it, the city's going to step in, make the repairs, and send them the bill. If that doesn't work, the city's taking over the building. We're putting the worst landlords out of business. And we're going to transform 311 by bringing the latest in cutting-edge technology.
Yeah, Ben Phillips, shout out to him. He sent this clip to me. And he says, we're going to take over the building.
Is this a leaked clip? Is this a leaked clip? Thank good. We have a lot of reporters out there who have Instagram. Hey, listen, I want to thank you guys for finding this clip of PBD.
It took a lot of digging.
Would you have to go all the way to his YouTube channel?
No, I had to Mission Impossible into his studio, hanging by strings, install cameras and microphones.
Should we let them go on and on and make asses of themselves about this?
Yeah.
And he says, we're going to take over the building.
So it's theirs. It's the city's.
So you mean like seize the means of production communists?
Wait a minute.
So he's saying the quiet part out loud.
Yes.
And people voted for
That's right.
And bravo, New York City.
But the point is, you know what that means.
Yes.
You know what that means. Challenge is, He's going to need Albany to get some of the stuff done. That's what this family was saying last night. He's going to need Hochul. What's the likelihood of Hochul agreeing to the 2% increase on the
probably
on the rich?
Very low. She's up for re-election.
She's up for re-election. What is? Does he need her?
Okay, pause it for a second.
The policy guy.
This is the policy guy comes in there. She's up for re-election, and a 2% tax on millionaires, that would be 50,000 people who.
Less than 2% of the state.
Who would be upset about that? And just to remind you, since I'm the policy guy, there are how many millions of people live in New York State? How many people do in New York State? Like 12 million? No, more. But 50,000 people.
19.87
million. But 50,000 people. So she's running for re-election. That's going to be pretty tough. It is exactly the opposite. It's going to be tough for her not to say that we're going to put a millionaire tax on when she's getting running from. You got Antonio Delgado running to her left. But these guys are such morons. Incidentally, this whole. What Mamdani is doing that he presented in that video in terms of being new, at least that we heard, he went on to the 311 stuff, but he's increasing the fines so that the slumlords actually have to take care of the buildings. However, these guys are going to be very upset to hear that Barclays Center, just down the road from us, was all done by eminent domain.
Home of the Nets.
The home of the Nets and about three or four big apartment buildings. In fact, it was also, not only that, it was done in such a way that was it Bruce Ratner? Ratner, the developer. They bought up a bunch of the buildings. Then they basically let them just dilapidate so that the city could condemn them and basically take over the whole thing. So the city has the ability to do that and has always had the ability to do that and does it and usually does it on behalf of capital. However, prior to Zohran Mamdani winning the mayorality in New York City, in fact, prior to him probably winning any election, probably even prior to him being a rapper, it's quite possible that even prior to him being born, the unsafe buildings, New York City Administrative Code was passed. New York City Department of Buildings can initiate court proceedings against unsafe buildings under the provisions of the Administrative Code of City of New York, specifically sections 28216.1 through 28216.11. The process for unsafe building action involves A, notice and summons. The Department of Buildings serves a notice survey and summons to interested parties requiring them to address unsafe condition. You remember when Zohran said, first we're going to tell them, you got to deal with this.
How Stalinist of him.
Then the court order, if the owner fails to correct the condition, a court may issue a precept, which is an order authorizing the city to perform the necessary work, which is what he said they would do. We'll go in and do it, such as sealing, demolition, or other emergency repairs, and charge the cost to the property, which is exactly what he said they were going to do.
Is this Cuban law, or is this New York law?
Then, the final one is lien creation. Unpaid costs for emergency work become a lien on the property, which can eventually, in other words, you can't sell this property. There's a lien on it. It basically ties it up. Can lead to a foreclosure and seizure of the lien if the lien remains unpaid. In other words, they can seize the building. Chronic housing code violations. The New York City Department of Housing Preservation and Development enforces the New York City Housing Maintenance Code, while HPD primarily issues fines and orders, emergency repairs with costs becoming tax liens. Chronic and severe violations can lead to more drastic measures. 7A program under Article 7A of the New York State Real Property Actions and Proceedings Law, a court may appoint an administrator to manage a building if the conditions are dangerous to the life, health, or safety of the tenants and the owner is unable or unwilling to correct them. The administrator collects rent and uses it to make repairs, and then it can go into a third-party transfer program. The point is that these guys are freaking out about something that has already existed in New York City.
Uh-huh. So kind of like the rent control stuff.
What? Rent control?
Freeze the rent.
Freeze the rent. Who's done that? Oh, Bill de Blasio. And countless other mayors of New York City. They're so dumb, but they're so dumb, but they also know that they're so dumb. They may not know that their audience is so dumb that their audience doesn't know how dumb they are.
And they can't get feedback from the audience saying, hey, you're dumb, because the audience thinks they're smart.
Exactly.
And so it's a feedback loop. I think we should play a little bit more.
Help also to be able to increase the corporate taxes. Same thing. He's got to go through Albany.
Of course.
Tom. Yes.
Yes. Some of it. And I'm diving into it with Brandon so that we can really know step by step what he can and can't do. Some of the things he can do with the stroke of a pen, similar to a president's executive order.
Some of the
other things
do.
He can't. We're going to put the list so people can see.
We're going to see. Remember that one mayor that Scaramucci was talking about, Lindsay, pre-1971. You know, this guy apparently used to be a Republican.
His vague history
of New York Lindsay. City politics.
There was, if you wanted to do the Lena Khan thing.
Yes, let's hear his Lena Khan thing.
Let me find my time code on.
I think I'm due for my biannual visit to PBD.
Yeah.
Aren't I? When did I do it last? Was that last year?
Gotta check the email.
2 years ago?
Hopefully it's not going to spam.
I think he would have you back on, right?
Why not? Why not?
Oh, I see 2510 here. Here it is.
Zoran Mamdani taps big tech antagonist Lena Khanas, co-chair mayoral transition team. You should see his transition
hold
team.
Hold on 1 second.
What? That's not a hard one.
Lena Khanas? It's Lena Khan.
What was he seeing?
I have no idea.
But the thing is that the amazing thing is that somehow he missed the entire Lena Khan is no. I mean, I don't know if your average voter knows. But anybody who's been following politics during the Biden era, one of the big questions was, is Kamala Harris going to keep Lena Khan?
Yeah.
At the risk of offending Emma, I called it Lena Khan her Taylor Swift.
Yeah, this is someone.
Well, she does. Oh, yes. But she doesn't like Taylor Swift.
Right. That's her. That's her.
Oh, her substitute.
Yeah. But they have to now act like Lena Khanas is a known threat who they've never seen her name on paper.
That's
before.
Right.
Coach Haps, big tech antagonist, Lena Khanas, co-chair mayoral
that's
transition
what it is.
Team.
Hold on.
Is it apostrophe
Eric,
S?
No, Eric Guy C got it. It was Lena Khan as co-chair.
Oh my God.
And he just go back. So just listen to me. It's Lena Khan as co-chair of the transition thing. And he reads it as Lena Khanaz.
Zoran Mamdani taps big tech antagonist Lena Khanaz, co-chair mayoral transition team.
He doesn't want to wear
readers.
You
should see his transition team. He doesn't believe in hiring men, okay? Did you see this, Rob?
Was it Lena Khan?
Oh, wait. Andrew figures it out.
He doesn't believe in hiring men, okay? Did you see this, Rob?
Was it Lena Khan? What's her name?
Lisa Khan. Lisa Khan.
Lena.
I'm sorry, Lena Khan.
Yeah.
Play this clip, Ron.
Live at Budokan.
Good morning, everybody. It's great to see you all. I want to start off by just congratulating our mayor-elect, Mamdani, on an incredible victory and a just remarkable campaign this last year. I think what we saw last night was New Yorkers not just electing a new mayor, but clearly rejecting a politics where outsized corporate power and money too often end up dictating our politics. And a clear mandate for change where New Yorkers can get ahead and where all workers and small businesses can thrive, not just get by. I think what we saw through the campaign was an operation that showed extraordinary discipline, rigor, talent.
They're playing a long clip of this. I wonder if they're trying to work out what her name is, or they're trying to figure out what it is that they're supposed to be scared of.
The vision.
You can pause it right there. Look, just so you know who she is, she's the former Federal Trade Commission chair, and she's going to be serving as a co-chair on the transition team. And the 36-year-old Democrat who brought major cases against Meta and Amazon while running the FTC from 2021 to 2025 surprised some onlookers on Wednesday as she appeared alongside Mamdani at his first post-election press conference. Tom, why is this so important to businesses in New York City?
Because I don't understand any of this. And the only thing I came up with, there was three women in the video, so I assume he's not hiring any men. He literally today announced that he appointed his first deputy mayor, Dean Fulahan. I'm sorry, Dean Fulahan appointed. It's a weird last name. Fulahan appointed?
Did you hear transition team? They're going to.
Oh, right. Forced transition.
They're forced transitioning Zoran
on Mamdani. Let's hear what Tom. Let's hear what Tom's take is on this. He's the policy guy there.
At his first post-election press conference. Tom, why is this so important to businesses in New York City?
Because he has picked somebody who is picking on businesses. And by the way, this was a pick that, in my opinion, of everything I've read, that was an Obama influence pick that was made by Biden because she was named to the Federal Trade Commission. And my opinion, based on what I've read, is that Biden didn't really understand everything about her, and she was kind of pushed through by other people that were working with Biden to get it done. And all she
So this is an Obama pick.
Ooh.
First of all, it was not. Incidentally, Obama sucked on antitrust. I don't think he's read anything. I think he's not even expressing an opinion. He's just sort of shooting. It's like literally throwing darts at a wall in the dark.
Didn't we have Lina Khan on when Obama was president?
And... Oh, well, the first time we had her on was in 2012.
Yeah.
And I think we had her on two or three times, through the Obama years. And maybe the Trump years, and she was a professor.
She wrote a 2012 article titled Obama's Game of Chicken, where she criticized the Obama administration to failure to effectively address.
If anything, in terms of who influenced her pick would have been Elizabeth Warren or that folks in that antitrust camp. But
well, that's what happens when ChatGPT does all your research.
It's just amazing. Like, Tom, you have glasses. Tell us about this.
Pushed through by other people that were working with Biden to get it done. And all she did for her time there was question every merger. All mergers aren't bad. Sometimes mergers save jobs by creating a single stronger organization out of two. And she picked on people. And I'm not against that. Some of the things that Meta was asked to answer for, like the stuff they were intentionally trying to hook young girls to get them to stay on, and they were suffering,
depression and all
psychological effects. That's where government steps in to do good things, like OSHA, right? OSHA stepping in. But what she was doing, FTC,
liberal.
This was her mandate. She was anti-capitalist. So it wasn't just the FTC, Pat, trying to make good business decisions, good decisions about businesses to protect citizens and investors and things. She was actively anti-capitalist. And I believe that she was put there by other people and that Biden didn't really know what he put there. And now she, no surprise, the lady picking on business is now picked by Mamdani to lead her transition, to lead his transition.
And one other thing to think about. I mean, listen.
It's so dumb. I can't even. She is identified herself as a capitalist. And one of the major principles of antitrust is that it is attempting to allow more competition within markets and businesses and actually allowing more entrepreneurs to flourish. We're going to have, I think, tomorrow.
Ryan Cooper.
Ryan Cooper is going to be on to talk about the relationship between antitrust and socialist.
You want to hear Sauce Nick on it before we get to Cooper?
Yeah, let's hear
get the secret sauce.
Now, he's not the policy guy, but he's the tampon guy.
I'm the testosterone.
To leader transition, to lead his transition.
And one other thing to think about. I mean, listen, there's two ends of the spectrum. She's a progressive, and she's very aggressive when it comes to monopolies and antitrust laws, which we understand. We don't want monopolies in this country.
Okay.
But she's also what it would appear to be very anti-capitalist. So I think she made her name really advocating against Amazon. And if you remember what happened in New York right before COVID, you have a representative in New York named AOC. Our friends in New York know her. Who was vocally and politically opposed to Jeff Bezos moving a headquarters.
Like HQ2 or something.
Exactly. To New York. Do you know how much money this would have brought to New York? Do you know how many jobs this would have brought to New York?
You don't.
Do you know much more 25, opportunity?
25,000 jobs at $150,000 average salary.
You don't and think taxes. New Yorkers want that job? You don't think New Yorkers who are struggling with affordability and the wage gap and the wealth gap wanted those jobs? So it's okay to be antitrust and anti-monopoly. I get it. But when you're anti-capitalist and anti-business, that's where people have a problem with people like this.
Well, aside from Lina Khan and AOC being both being women, it's not clear that Lina Khan was involved in that. But even if she was, the Amazon thing was a scam. They never even ended up building any of those in the sweepstakes that was going around. In terms of affordability, what was happening is that Amazon officials were coming in and buying up all the property around there from out of state, driving up the prices of this stuff. The jobs would have never materialized. Amazon ended up already, you know, since that time, putting in thousands of jobs in New York City anyways.
Yeah, we'll check out this Data for Progress write-up by Colin Fitzgerald and Colin McDonald. Why AOC was right about HQ2, if you want.
And it would have cost the city and state $3.5 billion.
It's actually like the was such a sham. It was Jeff Bezos basically making municipalities across the country give him intelligence about their entire infrastructure.
He was like, hey, we don't want to spend the money to figure out and deploy all of these people across the country to assess where we should have our warehouses, where the best transportation is. We need to have hubs all over the country. And so we're going to pretend like we're having a competition, and you're all going to put in information to us that we couldn't get otherwise. A lot of the stuff probably sensitive, and we're going to get a benefit over our competitors. We're going to see which roads can handle these type of logistics, which roads can handle these type of trucks. Where could we find the most amount of energy capacity to deploy electric vehicles in this area? So on and so on and so on. Information they're probably still using to this day.
And I don't think a lot of the New Yorkers still living here struggling to pay rent are thinking they would have been in line for the corporate Amazon jobs that would have been moved there hypothetically.
Let's go to the phones. You call them from a 631 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Is this a Nassau County spokesperson from Nassau County?
Nassau County spokesperson from Nassau County. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. First thing I'll just start off with real quick is I know you keep saying you couldn't find a loss for Democrats anywhere on Tuesday. Well, look no further than the great state of Long Island, where I think Republicans shifted to the right, I think 4 or 6 more points. It was, if you only lived here and had no internet, you would think it was a red wave. That's how rough it was out here. But
did Democrats lose seats that they held?
No. Only just like the county legislator just actually technically the legislator after the maps were like ungerrymandered, I think it's instead of being 12-7, it's 11-8. So that's the only win I saw for Democrats out here in Nassau County. But nothing other than that, nothing flipped.
Nothing flipped. But my point is that Democrats weren't supposed to win. Nobody expected Democrats to win there.
Yeah, that's true. But I just, you know, talking about Mom Donnie and the city and all that, just two things I want to talk about city related. One, I'm seeing like it's getting more probable that Chiyose is going to possibly primary Jeffries.
I think that wasn't that announced today.
The New York Times reported it, so maybe it's not officially.
Maybe
announced.
It's not official.
I think it's like they're reporting that he's telling like allies and stuff. I haven't seen him announce it, but that'll be fun. I saw Zoran's or things that like he's going to stay out of it, which you know it is what it is. But you know, hopefully we could get something for him. And then the only other thing I want to bring up is I saw David Dayan's American Prospects. He released a article today or someone wrote for the paper that they listed six things that the Zoran administration can do pretty quickly that could really show like or like do a lot of good for the city. And I thought they were just really interesting things. And, you know, I'm sure you guys will read it. I know you're friends with him. But some of the things I thought was interesting was like they said that he could do like a New York City public option for some medicines like EpiPens and stuff that they could sell to hospitals. I saw he could announce like a sort of like state of emergency to like look into like price gouging and like grocery prices and stuff like that. And I just thought that'd be, you know, typically for a regular old Democrat, I wouldn't expect much, but obviously since it's Zoran, I am excited to see if he actually does, you know, however many of those six things. So that'd be a really great start to his tenure, but
we'll see.
Yeah.
I'll check out that article. Appreciate the call.
Yep. Thank you. Have a good one.
We'll see. Very important when Democrats win these type of races. Social Democrats, Democratic Socialists, all of them, when they win these type of races, they got to deliver. Got to deliver. Calling from a 603 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? 603.
Is it me?
Yes, it is you.
Hi, I'm calling from New Hampshire, the great state with our two lovely senators.
Yes. And my understanding is that Maggie Hassan's daughter is running for Congress up there, and she is against the deal, the cave.
No, other way around. It's Shaheen's daughter.
Shaheen's daughter. Sorry.
Yeah, I wanted to call to shine a light on some of the upcoming elections because I think a lot of people don't really know what's going on in the state. And I just wanted to say, like, so for the seat that is Shaheen's, because she's retiring, everyone's telling her to resign, but she's retiring anyway, and she needs to be primaried, we can't. But Chris Pappas is running for her seat, and he's our current representative, and he's basically the exact same as them, you know, centrist, but already endorsed by AIPAC. But running against him is Karishma Manzoor, and she is a left-wing candidate. I think that she should be platformed more. With regard to the representatives' seats, for the seat that is currently Chris Pappas's, which is what Shaheen's daughter is running for, so we can't let her in there. I think Keith Howard is a great candidate. And then finally for governor, because we need to get rid of Kelly Ayotte, I would love to see John Kuiper. So hopefully those people can get a better profile so we can actually elect them.
Okay, and who did you say was running for that seat, the congressional seat?
Karishma Manzoor.
No, she's running for the Senate seat. Who's running for the House seat?
Heath Howard.
Heath Howard, okay.
Yeah, H-E-A-T-H.
All right, we'll look into those folks.
All right, great.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
We'll see. Let's do more candidates. Calling from a 203 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello. This is John from the beautiful Oakland, California, which Trump recently said was too far gone to even discuss. So there you go with that.
All right. But, well, let's not discuss that. What else you got?
Yes, exactly. I wanted to ask about, I don't know if you already discussed this, but the strategy of the 10 Democrats that folded, do you think that there may be...
Wasn't it eight?
The eight, sorry. I think, yeah, ACE, right?
Yeah.
Are they accelerationists, do you think? Are
no.
they trying to they just sold out. They're not
I think there's a mix of probably motivations. You know, maybe Kane felt the pressure because he's got a lot of federal workers in Virginia, ostensibly. Maybe there's something about Vegas and federal workers that maybe more people out there, and I don't know, Bureau of Land Management. I'm not sure. But I think a big part of it was, again, like I said earlier, to avoid getting rid of the filibuster by the Republicans. And I think and they were getting a lot of grief probably because of airline travel. And I think some of them voted that way because they were doing a solid for a friend of theirs in the Senate. And so, you know, if you're retiring as a senator, my experience is that 98% of them monetize those relationships. And to allow the, you know, their fellow senators to maintain the filibuster, people reward that. Thanks, bud. Let me know when you need something. Honestly, that's the way it works. Like it's so hard.
I'm sure it is.
It's so hard. I appreciate the call. It is so hard, I think, for us to really wrap our heads around that these people will base the decisions that will impact hundreds of millions of people on the same sort of like set of principles that you and I will use to determine whether we go to a barbecue on the weekend. I like that, dude. Or, you know, it's really sweet of that guy to let me use his car. Cause it would have been a huge hassle to go to IKEA and have to, you know, get some type of like Uber that was big enough to hold that chair. I appreciate him doing a solid for me.
You see this in how we mourn people like Dick Cheney, and people talk about how like they had personal interactions with them. It's like, not interested.
No. Horrible. All right. One more, at least one more call. Russell from Bed IMs. Hey, Sam, did I scare you yesterday? Calling from a 954 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Matt from Coconut Creek, Florida, not too far away from your PVD friends.
Matt from Coconut Creek. Maybe Andrew Cuomo will be a, what do you call it?
A neighbor of mine.
A neighbor of yours soon.
Yeah, so I called today. I'm definitely biased on this. I'm a teacher, and I am curious if you agree with me that I think there's a hole that can be filled with by progressives that want to run for politics with in regards to public education. I think there's just so many things about public education that everybody wants fixed, just like. Well, you know, right now, economic populism is becoming more and more popular amongst like just the regular electorate, right? People who don't follow this all that often. I think it's just weird to me that we rarely ever hear about improvements in public education. I don't live in New York, but I didn't really see that too much in like Mamdani's campaign.
No, no. In fact, I asked him. Didn't I ask him that when he came on?
No, that's a question you gave me, but I didn't get a chance to ask
okay.
him at a press
conference. I mean, the only thing he spoke about education was he did, I think, like in some of his acceptance speeches, talking about adding teachers and talk about cutting outside consultants, all of which, you know, broad strokes, good. But the Democratic Party has been completely bereft of educational ideas since the failure of the corporate reform movement was more or less accepted, right? Like high stakes testing got rolled back. The whole value add teaching measurements got rolled back. The Rand Corporation was hired by the Gates Foundation to assess the Gates Foundation's 10-year-long, maybe 12-year-long educational experiment, and basically said, yeah, no, it didn't work. You should have listened to educators. I mean, literally, that's what it said. Yeah. Meanwhile, our entire public education system went off the rails. I think particularly in the wake of COVID, when we still have, you know, people who entered into the public school system, would the youngest cohort would be like 11 or 10 right now in terms of COVID. And I think like everybody's been in this sort of like recover from COVID mode, try and just like deal with kids' propensity for absence. That came out of COVID, you know, maybe, kids who were like, 10, 11, 12, 13, maybe now have some like fundamental, issues like with like handwriting maybe, or sentence structure, stuff that you learn in first grade and maybe a little bit into second grade, that type of thing. And so there's no sort of like, I haven't seen, and I had to be honest, I haven't paid attention to it in the way that I used to, any new big education ideas coming out there. But I think like it's an era where people need to organize, strengthen teachers' unions. And also, you know, like during the era of that value add teaching and high stakes testing, I think we lost like a generation of teachers who basically were like, I'm not a robot. This doesn't make sense. I went into education, you know, like people go into education because if you're really serious about teaching, you understand that it's really like, it is student centric. Like you go and meet the students where they are. And for 20 years, we had a system that basically said, no, you bring the students, you know, you take these round pegs and put it into the square hole. And it basically took the ability of teachers to exercise their fundamental sort of strength as a teacher, which is like assess what a kid's needs are and address those individually. It took it out of their hands and they had to teach to a test. And so, I think there is an opportunity, but I think we're like a cycle or two away from that.
Yeah, because I just like to add, like, I think that it's, like, the main thing I think for me is because capital D Democrats are like completely unable to articulate a counterpoint against like the sneakiest thing against public schools right now, which is school choice. They can't, because if you're for austerity, school choice is so hard to counterattack, but progressives, I feel like, have a much better way of dealing with that situation.
That's always been the case. And I will say that is almost like not even specific to an educational theory. Like the argument is that public schools are a fundamental building block of a democratic society, that the first thing that we did as a country to expand our citizenry when we had freed slaves in this country was to institute a public education system. And it is fundamental to democracy. And supposed school choice is nothing more than a subsidy to rich people to send their kids to private school and an attack on this pillar of democracy, which is public school education. It is about not just putting people into jobs. It's about creating an informed and educated citizenry, not just about knowledge for knowledge's sake, although that's hugely important, but also their roles as citizens in our country. And so when Republicans attack that, what they're really attacking is democracy. You don't need to have an education or a pedagogical theory to defend public education. But I think, you know, too many Democrats are just, you know, back on their heels on all this stuff because we had 20 years of this corporate reform that undermined that premise. And so we need more of that. But I appreciate the call.
Thank you. All right. Have a good one.
Did you hear reportedly Kid Rock said he's canceling all tour dates in New York City because he doesn't sing for commies?
I better get a refund.
Oh my God.
On my tickets. I'll tell you that right now.
I did some
research.
A
single tear drops from Brian's eyes.
He had no announced dates in New York City. But anyway.
Wow. It's too bad. There's a lot of disappointed people.
He does have a new tour out that he's promoting, so I wonder if that has anything to do with
it. I for one, am waiting for the million people that the New York Post said were going to leave the city.
I know,
like, today, it felt like that a little bit because it was Veterans
Day. Have you checked apartment prices? Have they?
It's just like the sidewalks aren't that crowded.
Yeah, I'm. That was kind of my. I was kind of hedging on them leaving. That's kind of the. That was my savings account, basically.
Let's hope things are about to get a lot cheaper. No more lines. No more lines at your favorite restaurant. All right, let's just do this, moron. God. Is Bill Maher having Mrs. RFK Jr. on his program? Right?
Yes. It's just so embarrassing that that could be one of her titles.
What's her first name again?
Cheryl Hines.
Yeah. Cheryl Hines is sort of living. At one point, there was a joke I once heard about LA. I can't remember who it was, and I apologize for that. It's very bad form. I want to maybe like Drake Sather, or it could have been. Oh, I don't know if it was Drake or Jake Johansson. Somebody.
Some
I can't
solid joke writer.
Yeah,
type.
I can't remember. And it was like, you know, when you first move out to LA, you really you hate it, and then something inside you dies, and I think we are now looking at Cheryl Hines after something inside her had died. RFK, after he nearly escaped that barrage of naked photos that he was being forced to look at from Olivia Nuzzi, who was completely just out of the blue sending him naked photos as a way of harassing
her because she's also a member of the media.
I'm being bullied with text messages.
She then basically moved forward past that to be able to go out in public, even though her husband was basically usurping the ability of this country to fight public health crises. That got her a trip to Bill Maher's studio. Here's Bill Maher pontificating. Remember, Bill Maher still trying to justify his going and having a dinner with Donald Trump.
Again, one good thing about Trump, he really, really does not like war.
Which I love that about him.
I kind of do, because I don't want war either, and most of them are unnecessary.
I agree.
I mean, he took a long time when I had that dinner with him talking about the pictures he sees coming from Ukraine, the stuff that doesn't get out on the news.
And I'll pause it for a second. Incidentally, I don't want you to, like, just want to make this clear. Bill Maher is like, it's so fallen into the trap. Donald Trump is famous for sharing classified information to people who come to make him feel good about himself. And you have to be as equally insecure to not realize that's what he's doing and think, like, I'm special. Donald Trump was telling me in particular about pictures he had seen that day. It just so happens that he had seen the pictures that day and was like, Donald Trump is like immediately like, I got to impress Bill Maher. And Bill Maher, of course, thinks that he's impressive. So it doesn't occur to him that, like, Donald Trump is, like, so desperate to, make it seem. I mean, it's just if you have a con man at the top of a hierarchy, the people around him are necessarily sort of like incompetent thinkers and equally like incompetent, like they're con men themselves.
It reminds me of PBD as well.
Totally. Totally. All you need to do is just suck up the power and that's it. And it, Pete Hegseth, for instance. I mean, it's all over the administration cut.
From Ukraine, the stuff that doesn't get out on the news. It's like raw footage of bodies in the field.
Yes.
And you could tell it really moved him.
Pause it. I wonder if it moved him to see all those raw footage of the babies in Gaza. Really, really not so much. I wonder why that is. There's something about the tone of it. I'm looking at it, and I look at the pictures. There's a tone. a skin tone almost about the footage from the Ukraine.
If Trump feels any different about Ukraine, it's because he feels a slight from Putin that he didn't wind it up for him.
And I can, I'm kind of guy who can fix this. At least, you know, he's never not going to be Trump. So of course he's like, I saw 9 wars. And, you know, okay, even if it's half that, it's still good that we're solving them and not starting them.
That's the thing that I find. That I really like about President Trump when he talks about wars and talks about Ukraine. And he talks about Ukraine and Russia, and he will say they're losing people on both sides. And it's not just Ukraine is losing people. It's not just Russia is losing people. He sees both sides. This is a loss, a true loss for both sides. And you can feel it from him when he talks about that loss.
What an amazing insight. There are people on both sides who are dying in this war.
And I feel it so.
Is this their
hard.
Way of just avoiding what's going on, what has been going on in Israel and Gaza? Incidentally, 300 Palestinians have been killed since the ceasefire.
This is just a perfect conversation between two actors.
Yes. It is.
I like that about him.
It's
me too.
Half inch deep. Not even. It's so shallow that you can almost not get wet.
But they have a mission.
If a pool was this shallow, you would get in it and be like, I'm not even wet. I'm literally can actually I'm hydroplaning.
I mean, they were talking for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, they go into another part where she was like,
put up Kyle Kalinske's tweet, because just as a reminder, we have killed almost 80 people now in the Pacific and the Caribbean Sea because they're in boats. Kyle had a good point. Trump has bombed ships from Trinidad and Tobago, Colombia and Venezuela. He's threatening regime change. He's bombed Yemen, Somalia, Iran. He's threatened Greenland and Panama and Canada. And this is only in his second term. I hate war.
Look at all the time codes for this. People giving up so much of their life.
Oh, yeah, buddy. Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's run this clip. Well, maybe we should save this for tomorrow. Let's save the clip. From Muhammad's sister. Do we have that?
Yeah, it's in the tech chat, but we could also do it in the free half tomorrow.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it tomorrow at the end of the free half of the show. Folks. Should we take one more quick phone call? One more quickie. Let's see what we got here. I don't know what 719-610-631. Everybody's been hanging on 49 minutes. 610. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, that's me.
Yes, it is you. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Marty from Southeast Pennsylvania.
Marty from Southeast Pennsylvania, what is on your mind, Marty?
I've been kicking an idea around for, I don't know, a couple of weeks now. I was wondering if you'd mind if I defended the thesis.
It probably depends on what the idea is, but go ahead. Let's
hear. All right. Well, I saw a bunch of rumblings earlier on when the DSA had their big convention about how some of them wanted to start their own party. And I don't think they're big enough for that yet. But I do think that they're big enough to, I don't know, leverage a better position if they started moving towards the Greens instead of staying as like an endorsement wing of the Democrats, where they could actually like run their candidates.
Sorry, go ahead. Matt is having a meltdown right now. He's had to leave the room. He's had to leave the room. I think the issue is that the Green Party has the Green Party had a particular success in Southeast Pennsylvania?
Not necessarily, but that's a very good question. But when I'm looking online, I see that they've got ballot access in about half the states. But these things kind of grow exponentially, not linearly. So, you know, 24% is actually closer to 100%, or 50% is actually closer to 100% than, like, you know,
zero.
Anything else. Yeah.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem, I think. The Green Party, for whatever reason, has been just a mess. How many candidates do they have running? First of all, they shouldn't be running people for the presidency.
I agree.
And this has been going on now for 30.
They should be focusing more on like House of Representatives, if I'm being honest.
Yes.
But
absolutely.
Like that's what I think. Like,
but the
historically,
is,
an organized group of left wing people taking over an otherwise moribund and party and kind of using that network to fill out a coalition.
I mean, look.
It's your show.
I get what you're saying, and I think like, but here's the options, right? I mean, there's mm-hmm. three options. It seems to me. One, the DSA does not get that involved in electoral politics at this point. They continue to grow and build their strength as an organization, mm-hmm. Or they pursue taking over the Green Party, which it sounds like what you're suggesting, because there's already ballot access there.
I don't necessarily say take it over, but like be like a very sizable minority. Like there's like, what, 86,000 people in DSA, right? You total up all the other loosely affiliated political clubs in America, you might get, say, 120,000 people. That's about half of what the Green Party has right now. So you add that together, that's about a third. That's about a third of what they got. And I'm pretty sure that if your chapter is the reason that the Green Party has ballot access in your state, that means that you get to run your candidates as you see fit, because you're kind of the reason why they get to do it in the first place.
I mean, and it's like, not inconceivable to me
like
that there's
a lot of cons and it's not a lot of pros.
It's not inconceivable to me that putting aside what might be the actual agenda of the DSA, just putting mm-hmm. that aside for a moment, that taking over a Green Party in an area where they have ballot access and actually sort of like gearing towards something that has, more to accomplish. But I just don't think that the DSA is interested in that right now. And I think that you just saw the DSA, and granted it's New York, but I mean, presumably any place where the Green Party has any type of strength, it's going to be fairly, a more progressive. You just saw the DSA get one of their own elected mayor of New York City.
Yeah, and he voted for himself on the working family ticket, which I think kind of...
Well, that's fusion voting.
He's got...
That's fusion voting.
I know.
That's fusion voting, which is different in New York. I don't know. In Pennsylvania, I think the WFP is there. I'm not sure they have fusion voting, but that's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all in favor of fusion voting. I mean, I've never voted for a Democrat who is also on the WFP line. I've always voted for the WPF line, WFP line first, always.
All right. Well, it was just I was just thinking, like, if they could get, say...
But why wouldn't you take over the Democratic Party? Like, if you're talking about
they're
on the
much
local...
bigger, because they're much bigger and much harder to take over, and I'd rather fight them on their own terms than fight them inside their own bureaucracy.
Do you know how... First of all, I have a feeling that the Green Party bureaucracy is just as mired as any other bureaucracy. But in the efforts that it would be associated and taken over a... Hold on for a second. The efforts associated with taking over a county Green Party versus a Democratic county party, I would imagine, are exactly the same.
Maybe, but what if you've got half of their I don't know, their membership?
Well,
rather than,
you know what?
Yeah,
I would say this.
Of what they got.
Try it.
I mean, I switched over to the Greens in November, but
and how's that? How's that going?
I mean, I haven't ran for office, but...
No, but I mean in terms of taking over the Green Party apparatus.
I think it would have to be more organized than just a person doing it on the individual level.
Well, all right. You can do a test
pilot.
It's
just something I wanted to kick around. I just kind of wanted to see what people thought about it.
Well, I mean, I this is what I would do. I'd go on the Discord, see if you can get some people, and do proof of concept. I'm serious. I'm not being catty about this. I'm saying, like, you know, do it. And like, because I think, frankly, you'll find that if you go over to the Democratic, your Democratic county, there's going to be just a few people there. In fact, many of them are going to probably be looking to hand it off to somebody, as opposed to the Green Party, where I feel like the absence of a stronger institution actually means that people are going to try and hold on to their position within there.
They're going to fight tooth and nail for the scraps they got.
Yeah. Whereas I think the Democratic County party around you is like probably like old people who are just like, please let somebody else come in and take this over so it doesn't go away. That's my guess.
That.
And I would suggest you explore that and let us know.
Yeah.
Appreciate
I don't know.
Call.
Okay. Bye. Do you mind if I just say one thing first?
Yes.
All right. Real quick. I also agree that we shouldn't be at Jill Stein shouldn't be home, but I think like maybe in 2028, absolute wish casting, if they actually had like a viable candidate that could, you know, get people excited, if not get on the stage. Really what I was looking for was just something that could get a third party enough House seats that it's over the margin between Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, that's not going to happen on a national campaign. It's not going to happen on a national campaign. House elections are local. So, the Green Party has been doing this so long and cannot get that shit together. But if you think it can change, I would be all for it. But I would definitely go into the Discord and check it out.
All right.
Appreciate the call.
All right. Appreciate the answer.
All right. Science political. Folks, that's our call-in portion of the program. Sorry, that went a little longer and was not as fruitful as I had hoped. With all due respect. Science is political. The Green Party is even more worthless than the Democratic Party because they have literally zero power. DSA taking over the Dems is much easier and has had a larger base of people who will just vote for them because of the letter D.
Jabari Bisport ran as a Green, got nowhere, ran as a Democratic Socialist, and is now in power.
Carl Barks, Discord says, no thanks, Marty.
Go to a DSA meeting. These things are talked about all the time at DSA. And I wouldn't just count on, like, reports from the outside of the convention looking in to have them. Go have them with the people who you're asking to change and become Green Party members.
Left Coast, to the caller, there are caucuses within the DSA that believe in electoral work, and even one in particular that believes in taking over political parties, but that caucus is small. To all listeners, you should get involved with the DSA and learn about the caucuses if you believe in change, the change being spoken about.
Yes.
The Millrind, I can foresee the DSA taking over the entire Chester County Democratic Party within 5 years. The DSA is making a hard charge into Chester County. I think it's quite likely Chrissy Houlihan is about to get primary next year from the left. The only thing that will make that possible is the DSA, having been in the county now for a year, incrementally building infrastructure alongside with Democrats who are trying too much to act like Republicans. I only hear about the Green Party once every 4 years. They don't exist. DSA should take over this weekend shell of a Democratic Party. So science is political. All right. A couple more IMs and we're out of here. I want to go short today. Theo Bong. Oh, we got Left Reckoning. Theo Bong. Chuck Schumer legacy is failing to keep the left pro-Israel, his self-stated main goal. Indeed. Three more. Central Spiral. I'm an indigenous person, and yesterday I was dog-pilled by multiple people from your Discord server because I explained to them that colonization is still ongoing and that white people today are still best understood as colonizers because of their relationship in benefiting from the dispossession of indigenous people. This relationship exists with or without individual choice. Please weigh in with your thoughts on this. I know the term is disagreeable, but so is pretending the relationship has somehow been altered with time. I think that's a fair point as an academic perspective on this. I think the political realities are such that the colonization that started hundreds of years ago in this country still continues to the extent that, like, you know, we see it in the context even of our laws. You can go back to on Indigenous Peoples Day, we had we reran that Errico, I think his name was, interview. We talked about how, you know, the concept of I can't remember the name of it that allows essentially white Christians to find a land and discover it, even if there's people living on it, is there. But I think as a political matter, I think it's important to maintain that understanding that this is colonized land. But as a political matter, I'm not sure where you go from that, at least in the context of this country.
Yeah, you can have solidarity across that barrier.
I mean, I think
that said, like, there should be reparative policy about things like land back, starting with public lands, to get them out of, put them back into, you know, under native stewardship.
I think it is important, I mean, as a starting point, though, for people to acknowledge that we're a colonial project, and that doesn't, there's no, like, day that ends.
And certain, say, fascist tendencies within any colonial project couldn't be tapped in, even, you know, 200 years later, as opposed to, like, you know, as they are, we see them active in Israel now. I think, like, our propensity or the fuel fascism has here comes from that sort of process.
I don't think it's fair to say that the relationship doesn't alter with time, because it does. Yeah. Because the distance that from people's lived experience, both as the colonizer and the colonized, changes. But I do think having an understanding, like, sort of fundamentally, that is the ongoing project is important, so that you can then have a political program to, I don't think it's possible to reverse it at this point. I mean, realistically speaking.
No. And decolonial, like, academic stuff, I think it's pretty watered down pretty fast.
But I think it's helpful to have that awareness in terms of informing how you respond to it from a policy perspective. I also like, look, people get dogpiled everywhere. I don't think that people should be getting dogpiled, but, you know, it's the internet.
Yeah.
But your point remains. Left Coast, to the caller, there are caucuses in the DIO. Oh, we already read that. All right, three more. Train Boy, can I use one skin if I don't have foreskin? Thank you. Corporation ate my baby. Negotiate my health care costs. Sure, Trump. Go ahead and give me the same cost as vets that access the VA.
That'd be nice.
Mm.
Except for my lines are really short. But I want y'all to have it.
Scary Mountain Wizard. Kid Rock won't play NYC, but he will have no issue with coming up here to Bethel Woods and sharing his awful music with rural New Yorkers. Matt, Brian, great job today. Emma, wherever you are, great job. Folks, see you tomorrow. It might take all the strength I got to get